Wagner's Opera Stories by Grace Barber, The Rheingold. All is quiet, beautiful, and peaceful in our world now, but it has not always been so. Thousands of years ago, it was very different. Great earthquakes shook the foundations of the earth. Sharp lightning kept the sky on fire, and deep thunder rolled. Great giants lived on mountains so high that their peaks were partly hidden by the clouds. Black and ugly dwarfs lived under the earth and worked with all kinds of metals, while on the earth's surface lived the common race of men. Great were the struggles of these early days, and many were the lessons learned. So wonderful was the story of those faraway ages that it has been told again and again. Men whose souls seem to have been on fire have written books telling this story. Others have shown it in pictures, great and beautiful. But the most wonderful way it has ever been told is by the greatest musician of the world. In grand and sublime music, he has told of the mighty conflicts, the battles lost, the victories won, and the peace which came at last. So wonderful is this story as he told it, that the greatest singers of the world sing it over and over again, so that all people may learn its great lesson and be filled with a love stronger than the giants themselves. Perhaps as you read the story, or when you are men and women and you hear it sung, your hearts, too, will respond again to the struggles of those mighty heroes of long ago. Far away over the ocean in Germany, there is a very beautiful river which is called the Rhine. People go hundreds and thousands of miles to ride upon its waters. From its banks rise many hills. Some of them are very high, while others are lower and less steep. On these hills are quaint old castles, which for centuries were the homes of brave, true knights. But the story is not about the Rhine as it is now, but as it was thousands of years ago. At that time, ever so many strange, unearthly creatures lived in the beautiful Rhine River. They had long, golden hair and very happy faces, for they had never known sorrow. The queer thing about these maidens was that they could never be seen out of the river. They ate, slept, and played in its depths. Their father, who had left them many years ago, had called them the Rhine Daughters after their river home. In this river were many rocks. Some were very high and others so low that they could scarcely be seen. These were playmates for the Rhine Daughters. They could jump from one rock to another as lightly as a squirrel can spring from tree to tree. On the highest rock of all was what all this story is about, a lump of pure, solid gold, more bright than anything imaginable. This gold had belonged to the River Rhine as long as anyone then living could remember. And it, too, was named after the river, so its name was the Rheingold. When the father of the maidens left them, he told them that whatever else they did, they must be sure to watch and guard this Rheingold. Never for one instant were they to leave it alone, lest someone might come and steal it away. One morning they were unusually happy as they danced from one rock to another, and no wonder, for the Rhine gold looked more beautiful than ever as the sun came up and shone upon it. It looked then as if hundreds of sunbeams were hidden within it. The Rhine daughters noticed how beautiful it was, and taking hold of hands, they danced around it. As they danced, they began to sing in fresh, glad tones a beautiful song. Scarcely had the last notes died away when they heard a voice. They turned quickly to see whence it came, but no one was there. Presently they heard the voice again, and looking down they saw many little ripples on the surface of the river. The voice seemed to be coming nearer and nearer. In a moment, up out of the river came the ugliest little dwarf you can imagine. He was very small, and instead of standing up straight as a knight or brave man would stand, he was bent away over. His face was dark and hideous, and his coal-black hair as matted as if it had never been combed. He was so different from anyone the Rhine daughters had ever seen that at first they were frightened. "Good morning to you," said the dwarf. "Good morning, sir," said the Rhine daughters. "Who are you, and where did you come from?"
"I am Alberic, king of the Nibelungs, and I came from my home under the earth."
"You do not live under the earth where there is no sunshine, do you?" asked one of the maidens.
"Sunshine," said Alberic, squinting his eyes. "I do not like sunshine. It hurts my eyes."
"Are the Nibelungs all black and ugly like you?" asked another Rhine daughter.
"Yes, they are all dark, but if you will come back with me, I will make you my queen, and then you will not think us ugly."
"What? Leave the sunshine and our Rhine gold?
Never, not even to be a queen would I do that."
"Gold," said Alberic, "where is it?"
"Come up here and you will see it," called the Rhine daughters.
Alberic tried to climb up, but the rocks were so slippery that it took him a long time, for at every other step he slipped back. Finally, he got high enough to see the gold, and it almost blinded him, for the sun was shining directly upon it, and then, too, you know, his eyes were not used to the sunlight.
"Tell me about this gold," said Alberic.
"Oh, yes, we never tire of telling the story of Rhine gold, that is, as much as we know of it. Many, many years ago, when our father left us, he told us to watch and guard the gold. Then he told us the secret of its power. Whoever can gain possession of the gold can make it into a magic ring, and that ring will make him master of all earthly powers except love."
"Love? What do I care for love if I can have magic power?" cried the dwarf.
"Oh, but love is all that makes the world beautiful. 'Tis love that sends the sunshine and the flowers," said one of the Rhine daughters.
"Love is nothing to me," said Alberic, and before they knew it, he had stolen the gold and was fast disappearing beneath the river.
"Oh, our Rhine gold! Our Rhine gold is gone!" cried the maidens. They called loudly to Alberic, but it was too late, for already he had vanished, and they could see nothing but the ripples on the surface of the river. They sprang into the water, but only to see him sink down, down, down to his deep, dark home, and they could hear him say, "Now the earth is mine."
"Ah," said the sorrowful Rhine daughters, as they came up to the rocks again, "he thinks he has the whole world, but it will be nothing to him if he has not love. Our gold, our beautiful gold, why did Alberic steal it?" And they sadly mourned. After that, the Rhine daughters rarely played on the rocks, but whenever they were seen there, they could be heard singing of their Rhine gold. But how changed was their song! Instead of being full of joy, it was sorrowful and sad, for the beautiful lump of gold which had always been theirs had been stolen. High up on top of a mountain lived some very wise giants. The wisest one was the king, and his name was Votan. For a long time, Votan had wanted a palace large enough for all the giants to live in, but he could find no one stalwart and strong enough to build it, so they had to live out of doors on the mountain. One morning they were all awakened very early by a queer rumbling sound.
"What is that noise?" said Votan's sister.
"I do not know. It sounds like an earthquake," answered he.
"Listen, it seems to come nearer. It looks as if a great mountain were moving toward us."
Nearer and nearer came the sound, and nearer came what they thought was a mountain.
"It is a man," cried Votan, "but he is 10 times larger than any of us. I must go to meet him."
"Oh, there," cried Votan, "what do you want?"
"I've come to build you a palace," thundered the big giant.
"First, tell me who you are," said Votan.
"I am Fafnir, the frost giant, and I am so strong I could lift this mountain if I chose."
"How long will it take you, and how much will you charge for building me a palace? It must be so large that it will cover the whole top of yonder mountain."
"I will build the palace tonight, so that you can move in tomorrow at sunrise. But for pay, you must give me your beautiful sister."
Votan's thoughts were only of the palace, so
Without thinking, he promised to give his sister to Fafnir as soon as the palace was finished. All that day, Wotan and his comrades feasted and danced and had a very happy time, for they were all thinking of the beautiful palace which was to be theirs in the morning. At night, all but Fafnir lay down on the mountainside to sleep. The full moon shone as bright as day and gave light to Fafnir for his work. With one step, he crossed over to the mountain where the palace was to be and quickly went to work. Such stones as he brought, some were as large as an ordinary house, some smaller, and some even larger. At midnight, the outside of the palace was completed, and Fafnir went inside to finish putting in the windows and doors. After a while, the moon and stars began to grow dim, and the great giant came outside to look at his work. "All finished," he said, "and before sunrise, too. I will step back to the other mountain and wait for the giants to awaken." Very soon it began to grow light. The sun came up and shone on the beautiful white marble palace. Fafnir sat down and waited, but it was not long before he heard Wotan's wife calling him to awake and see the beautiful palace. Wotan and the other giants arose quickly and looked across to the mountain on which stood their new home. "How beautiful! How beautiful!" they cried. "Now you must give me your sister," said Fafnir, "for I must go back at once to the Frost Country." "You must think of some other way for me to pay you, for I cannot let my sister go. Every morning she feeds us with golden apples, and that keeps us always young." "Very well," said Fafnir, and the whole mountain shook as he spoke, for he was more than angry. "I will tear the palace down quicker than I built it."
"No, no, don't do that," cried Wotan. "Give me just 1 hour in which to talk to my brother about it."
"One hour only," said Fafnir. Wotan soon found his brother and told him they had but 1 hour in which to save their sister. Then he told him how he had promised to give his sister in payment for the palace. "That was a very foolish thing to do," said his brother. "But perhaps we can think of something else which will answer. This morning when I was walking down beside the Rhine, I saw Black Alberic steal the Rhine gold, and I also heard the Rhine daughters tell him that a ring could be made of it, and the ring would give him a magic secret so he could possess all earthly power save love." "Perhaps Fafnir would take the gold instead of our sister," continued the brother. "Let us go and ask him." They hurried back to Fafnir and asked him if he would take the gold instead of their sister. "Yes, I will, but until you have the gold, I will keep your sister. When you bring the gold here, I will bring your sister back to you." Then, lifting the beautiful maiden in his arms, Fafnir hurried away, and instantly the giants began to grow old. Clouds came across the sky. The sun was hidden. "Quick, brother, let us go at once," cried Wotan. They started immediately and went down, down, down. As they neared Alberic's kingdom, such a noise as greeted their ears. It was just like ever so many hundreds of people pounding on anvils. "Here we are," said Wotan. "I wonder where Alberic is. When he comes, what shall I say to him?"
"Leave that to me," said his brother. Wotan's brother was the most cunning and sly one of all the family of giants. Running back and forth in every direction were queer little people, all black and bent like Alberic, and each one carrying gold, silver, or precious stones. "Mime, bring me that magic helmet at once, or I will give you a good beating," cried Alberic to his brother.
"I cannot make it," whined Mime.
"You have it in your hand. I am king here, and I want you to understand that what you make belongs to me, and not to you," cried Alberic.
"Take it then," said Mime, throwing it at him.
At that moment Alberic noticed Wotan and his brother.
"What are you here for, and what do you want?" he asked.
"Oh, we just came to see you," said Wotan's brother. "What use is that magic helmet?"
"With that I can change myself into anything I wish," answered Alberic.
"Change into a dragon," said Wotan. Alberic slipped the helmet over his head, and instantly he disappeared,
and a huge dragon lay squirming before them, and then, just as quickly, the dragon vanished, and Alberic appeared.
"That is all very easy," said Votan's brother, "but I don't believe you can change into anything as small as a toad, can you?"
This made Alberic angry, and he put on the helmet, and in a moment a toad hopped at their feet.
"Step on him, quick, Votan," said his brother.
Votan put his great foot upon the little toad, but instantly the toad was gone, and there was Alberic struggling to get out from under the giant's foot.
"Let me go! You are crushing me!" screamed Alberic.
"Not until you give me every bit of your gold, the helmet and the ring," said Votan.
"You may have all but the ring. That I will keep," said Alberic.
"Then I will crush you," said the king of the giants.
"Take it all, then, and let me go," cried the dwarf.
Votan lifted his foot, and Alberic got up and commanded the gold to be brought. Without delay, Votan and his brother gathered it up and put it into large sacks. Then, turning to Alberic, Votan demanded the helmet, which he unwillingly gave.
"Now the magic ring."
Alberic's face grew blacker and blacker as he handed the ring to Votan.
"Listen well to what I say," he shouted. "Cursed is that ring. It will bring only sorrow and unhappiness to anyone who may possess it."
But Votan and his brother paid no attention to the curse. They picked up the gold and hurried back to the mountain. As they neared it, they heard again the rumbling sound, and looking to the east, they saw the frost giant, with the sister in his arms, coming over the mountain.
"Here is the gold. Now give us our sister that we may be young again," said Votan.
"Make a pile of it as high as your sister is tall," said Fafnir. "But if there is one little hole in it through which I can see the light, I will not give her back." Votan and the rest of the wise giants soon had the gold piled up, but they were careful not to put either the helmet or the magic ring upon it.
"I see a crack. Put on that helmet," shouted Fafnir.
Seeing that it was no use to refuse, Votan threw the helmet on the pile. Fafnir walked around the great heap of gold and looked closely at it.
"Here is just one more little crack. You must put the ring here, or I will take your sister away again."
"No, I must keep the ring," said Votan.
"Very well. I was afraid you would not give me enough gold," and taking the sister up in his arms, Fafnir started off.
"Give him the ring! Give him the ring!" cried all the giants, "or we shall soon grow so old that we cannot walk nor even see."
"Stop, Fafnir," called Wotan. "Leave our beautiful sister. Here is the ring, but I warn you that a curse goes with it."
"What do I care for a curse? I do not need love and happiness if I have gold," and Fafnir gathered up the shining heap, the helmet, and the ring. With one step he disappeared, but he had left the beautiful maiden, and in less than no time a change came over all the giants. They were young once more. But although Votan had regained his youth, he had such a queer, heavy feeling in his heart. Again and again he thought he heard a voice say, "Cursed is the ring. It will bring only sorrow and unhappiness to whoever possesses it. I shall never, never be really and truly happy again, because I did not give the ring back to the Rhine daughters. It has taken happiness away from me. Whom next will it curse? Oh, if I had but given it back, I could have brought happiness instead of unhappiness to many."
As he sat thinking, many black clouds appeared in the sky. Fierce lightning flashed. The thunder shook the whole earth. The rain poured down. It was a wild and terrible storm, but it lasted only a few moments. Again the sun shone out. Votan called all the giants about him, and looking up, they saw a rainbow bridge stretching from the mountain on which they were, away over to the one where the splendid palace stood in all its beauty.
"Let us go over to our Valhalla," said Votan, "for that shall be the name of our new home." One by one they stepped upon the bridge and walked slowly over, and all the time the Valhalla music could be heard.
Wotan was the last one to step upon the bridge. Very slowly he walked. Suddenly he stopped. "What do I hear?" said he to himself. "Oh, it is the Rhine daughters singing of their lost gold, and I might have given it back to them if only I had been brave enough. It will take someone who is braver and more of a hero than I to give it back," he added as he walked slowly on. "How different everything might have been if I had given it back. Then I would not feel this sadness. And now to think that everyone who has the ring must be unhappy because I did not give it back and break the curse." "How beautiful Valhalla is," said Wotan as he stepped into the palace. "But how dearly have I paid for it."